Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line a Colonel Ron Ray, a retired Marine Corps colonel, and he was certainly on a number of presidential commissions. He was the one of the assistant secretaries of defense during the Reagan administration, and he has, of course, taken a number of cases that have certainly implications as far as the federal law is concerned, and he submitted his amicus curiae on a number of very important cases. Colonel Ray, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Stan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be with you. I hope you and yours are well.
Well, we're doing just fine, only we're very disturbed about the way things are going. It almost just seems like there's an organized, orchestrated, coordinated attack to destroy the Christian foundations of this country, and specifically the Christian foundations of our military.
Well, there's no question about it seems that way, Stan. You know, Franklin Roosevelt said it best all the time as governor and frequently as president of the United States. He said, you can be sure if anything happens in politics, somebody planned it that way.
And I think it's so important to understand that the attack on Christianity is coordinated. They know exactly what they're doing, because they know if they can destroy the religious foundation of this nation, they can destroy the nation.
Well, they really understood. The interesting thing is that our enemy is more diligent than we are, the domestic enemies that have promoted this agenda. But they also understand a great deal about America. They read George Washington's farewell address, in which he laid out the most important political speech in the history of the country, which prior to World War One, grammar school children used to memorize. And it said that political prosperity in America depends upon two indispensable supports: religion, defined as Christianity in the Noah Webster Dictionary, and morality. And I think I've told your listeners before, and they've heard it from you and some of your other distinguished guests that you've had on, that in the Western civilization nations, Russia, Germany, France, the United States of America, to name four, where there's been a gradual, in some cases a radical a revolution, political revolution, and a dramatic change of government, beginning in France in 1789, there was a generation of sexual revolution, or a breakdown of morale, of morals, and a breakdown of Christianity, a great breakdown of religion, that preceded the political revolution that followed. That was the very case in Russia, Tsarist Russia. That was very much the case in Germany, and it's obviously been very much the case in the United States.
All right, fine. Well, of course, certainly there's a very much of an effort then to take religion out of our military academies, isn't there?
Well, there's no question in that, and I think where there'd be an interesting focus, Stan, we've talked about the military, and there's no question they focused on the first two principles. In fact, the first principle of the American military, they're really sort of Bible-based, they're certainly Christian-based principles. The first principle, written by John Adams in the summer of 1775, it's still on the books. It's been recognized in the 50s and expanded upon for the Navy and the Marine Corps. It was expanded upon to deal with the breakdown of morals and leadership during the Clinton administration in 97. The very language of John Adams was adopted by Congress in 97 as a solution, which is that commanding off the military, those in authority in our American military, would show in themselves the highest degree of virtue, honor,
hold that thought right there,
and patriotism.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray. He's a retired Marine Corps colonel, has actually served on presidential commissions, Assistant Secretary of Defense. During the Reagan administration, he's had a number of cases where he, of course, filed briefs with the Supreme Court. And certainly, through First Principles Press and his organization, he's trying to educate the American people about the very well-coordinated program to destroy the religious foundation of our military. Because if you destroy the religious foundation of our military, then it simply becomes a mercenary force made up of people trained to kill without any moral restraint. And there really are people who are doing everything they can to undermine the religious principles upon which our military was based. And certainly, Colonel Ray was saying that, you know, back in 1775, John Adams had written about the importance of morality among our military leaders. And what was that now? You said in 1997, Congress reiterated this idea because of the corruption of Bill Clinton. What was that? Just repeat that, because this is a new audience. They didn't hear the whole story.
Well, as I said that the language was in force, conduct unbecoming an officer and gentleman. But in 1956, now I'm going to give you a little more background. Remember, it was, I think, 55 when Dwight Eisenhower added "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance. Remember there was so much national security threat. There were security risks throughout the government. There was a lot of folks that were working with the Soviet Union at that time, from Harry Hopkins to Alger Hiss to so many others. That is, Verona intercepts have confirmed. So in 56, the John Adams formulation was expanded beyond commanding officers and officers to all of those in authority in the military to show this degree of honor and to guard against and suppress immoral and dissolute behavior. In other words, regardless of what was going on in society, the military was going to uphold a high standard of virtue. But in 1997, if you remember, there was the tailhook scandal, which was took a 4 or 5 day event, which would have been handled by the Navy in the ordinary course of events, was a 4 year witch hunt to get rid of a lot of the finest pilots in the United States Navy. The presidential commission I served on in 92 grew out of that, and it got worse and worse during the Clinton years in terms of the military. And of course, the commander in chief himself perjured himself and obviously was conducting a lot of inappropriate behavior in the Oval Office. But in 97, the Congress's response to that was to reenact the very language of John Adams, specifically applicable to the Army and the Air Force. Although they had similar standards, they enacted that, and with the findings...
Hold that thought for just one moment, Colonel. We'll be right back here. All right, this is Dr. Stan, and Colonel Ray is telling us about this statute that was passed in 1997 to try to reinstill the sense of virtue in our military until Congress enacted legislation, and pick up the story there.
Well, and if you look at their findings, they were making it very clear that when we entrust our young men, and now increasingly our young women, to the nation's armed forces, that they want there to be a certainty among the minds of parents that they're going to be trained militarily and that they're going to be able to be held to the high standards that have go all the way back. Remember George Washington's first general order as commander-in-chief in 1775 was to suppress profanity in the ranks. And they meant this, and it carried all the way through. And World War II began to see some of this virtue become under fire. I'll give you an example. World War I, sexually transmitted disease was a court-martial offense. In World War II, it was a medical problem. And then, of course, you know about the Kinsey business that followed. Today, after the 97 Act was passed, to reiterate this and to say, you guys need to teach and enforce this, in 98, they began, in the Clinton administration, under DOD, they began to look for ways around that language. They never did teach it. They never did enforce it. When George Bush ran for president, he said, help is on the way in the armed forces. And what he did was... He did not, with a simple stroke of a pen, he and Don Rumsfeld could have reversed what had happened under the Clinton administration, gone back to what we had under Ronald Reagan. In fact, they've gone much further in terms of the assignment of women in the armed forces towards combat. We have 47 American women dead, and we have a sexual abuse crisis in the armed forces, just like we had throughout the 90s.
And, of course, the people who would destroy the effectiveness of our military realized exactly what would happen if you begin moving men and women closely together in the intimate contact during combat. And they knew what they would do, demoralize our society. In fact, that has always been one of the major thrusts, to legalize homosexuality in the military and, of course, to then to integrate the women into the combat units, because they knew that would tend to lower their fighting capacity. And at least it doesn't seem to be that they've done too much of this in Iraq, although obviously an awful lot of women have been put in harm's way and put into situations where they would come under attack.
Well, there's no question about it. And, I mean, it's totally unnecessary. As I point out from my work on this for 3 or 4 years, my wife was on the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Service, appointed by then Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney, and I was appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush to a commission where we spent $4 million, hearings across the country to look and determine whether there were significant differences between men and women that had military significance. And I simply pointed out the first day of the hearings that men and women are separated in high school, college, professional, and Olympic sports. They do not compete against one another, and no one cries foul. No one says that's discrimination. No one calls that segregation. It's an acknowledgement of profound differences for men and women with sports purposes, and any man who's ever been in harm's way in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, or Coast Guard knows that combat's much more demanding than any sport.
And, of course, there have been the people on the other side who are, of course, trying to do away with that and trying to do away with the moral fabric of our society. And you know, I think that most people thought that when George Bush got into the White House, everything was going to be fine. I mean, Bill Clinton was such a disgrace. And yet, of course, I think we have a great deal to be disappointed about the way that George Bush has handled things since he came in, on one hand saying why we would never allow torture, and then threatening to veto legislation passed by the Senate that said that we should not have cruel, or depraved, or degrading treatment of prisoners. And the president said he would actually veto any legislation that contained that, even if it was the entire appropriations for the entire military, and we wouldn't have any money for the military if the Senate outlawed torture. Why would anybody want to support torture?
Or assassination. I mean, I got on Kennedy and Combs back in the early days, and the last minute they changed the subject we were going to be talking about, and they wanted to talk about assassination. I'm not just talking about the CIA, and I'm not talking about off the books and cheap dip folks. They're talking about the United States Armed Forces assassinating civilians. And, you know, and I've objected to it most strenuously. It violates international law. It goes all the way back to the early international law. It was over 400, 450 years old, United States laws that would prohibit that. And if a president wants to do that through the CIA and feels it's in the national interest to do that, he takes that responsibility under himself. But he does not order and cannot order political assassination by the U.S. Armed Forces. And it was interesting that while I could tell that Combs agreed with me, Hannity was outraged that a combat veteran, he thought I would be on his side, and, you know, anything goes, because we need to do that, and Combs was clearly on my side, but basically remained silent during the show, and he was so upset with me, he wanted to have me on the radio show the next morning to talk about it. And I made the example, Yamamoto. Yamamoto was a military officer. We had good intelligence. We'd broken the Japanese code. He was the commander that had led the attack on Pearl Harbor. We knew that he was flying a military mission in uniform, surrounded by Japanese fighters. But we ambushed him in the sky and shot his plane down. And that was combat. It's a whole other thing when you have he was a military leader. It was a military action, military planes. But if you want to have a military individual go in and shoot a civilian, assassinate a civilian at close range or long range, that's a problem. It's not a problem to shoot a military officer. We're talking about political leaders, civilians. That's a problem.
And, of course, the things that it almost seems like we've gone in a world gone mad. America, which once had the moral high ground, the Christian high ground, looked to by every nation in the world, you know, as the major leader on the right side, now seems to have abandoned its Christian principles, embracing homosexuality, embracing pornography, embracing moral depravity, and now torture.
Well, there's no question. And now it looks like that there must be a system of flights going to prisons in other locations and other outside the United States, to where we're taking people that are being questioned. And there's no question, when you saw what was going on in Abu Ghraib, we were certainly going beyond what the Geneva Convention, and in World War II, during the Korean War, we appealed to the world. The world responded to us in many ways, that the Koreans, the Chinese, and the Soviets were violating the Geneva Convention with regard to the treatment of American and United Nations prisoners. The same thing was true in Vietnam. We appealed. We had the high ground. And now here we are, shoe on the other foot. It's immoral. And worse than that, there's a kind of pragmatism in it that I find un-American.
Well, you know, it's sort of very interesting. If you followed the trial of the English girl who was actually tried for participating in what went on in Abu Ghraib, both she and all the people there said, look, we were just doing what the CIA officials told us to do. I mean, we were simply carrying out orders. Now, that doesn't excuse what they did. They should have said, we will not carry out the orders, and we'll bear the responsibility for violating an immoral order. The problem is that nobody in the CIA has ever been tried for that. In fact, the Vice President of the United States has gone to Senator McCain and senators saying, well, if you want to outlaw, you know, torture, that's all right, but at least allow the CIA to continue doing that. So, obviously, this is official CIA policy. The CIA is directly answerable to the president, and there's no way he can say, I don't know what's going on. The only thing that he says is, we don't do it, and yet he's threatened to veto the legislation that outlaws it.
Well, it's, like I said, it's sheer pragmatism, and there's no question there have been other foreign nationals involved. There's no question the Israelis have been involved, and, of course, that's been accusations made by human rights groups, UN, Palestinian groups have complained about that for many, many years. And they're experts at it. I think that they've been involved. It was pretty clear when there's a new book out by that Brigadier General, the woman who was
She was in charge of Abu Ghraib.
And yeah, well, she was in charge of more than just Abu Ghraib, and she hadn't been there very long. And it made it clear when you kind of read it. And I haven't read the book, but I heard a book review and heard her interviewed, and it seems to me pretty clear that she believed her hands were tied, and that she was following practices, pressures to gain information any way it could be done, and specific suggestions were made about how it should be done.
And of course, didn't a lot of this come from the CIA that was operating there?
Well, like I said, there were a lot of civilians in and out of there, and some were Americans and some were not Americans, and some of the international press, both in Europe and in Great Britain, have suggested the presence of the Israelis in this endeavor, particularly with the ones that were high profile or high valued terrorist suspects.
Well, I want to know where the outcry is from the Christian leaders of this country. I mean, that is, I think, the question every Christian in this country should ask. Why are the Christian leaders going along with this? Admittedly, they're getting regular calls and from Karl Rove, and they're being buttered up and being pandered to, but don't any of them have the courage to stand up and say, this is morally wrong, and we cannot support an administration? Now, I don't support the Democrats. I could never support the Democrats. But how can I support the Republicans when they're doing things that are in violation of not only man's law, but God's law?
Well, that's an interesting question. You might look at the latest issue of Vanity Fair, which does some excellent investigative journalism, and there's a 10-page article in there on the evangelical movement in this country. And, in fact, it mentions the Council for National Policy, and it talks about a lot of our leaders. And it's a very telling article that I recommend any of your listeners listen to. But I can assure you that if any of these things were happening under Clinton, there'd be an outcry from 70 million evangelicals in this country.
And they're
silent. They're really silent. They want, I guess, to be able to get to call the White House when they need, and they're, I mean, there are dozens of issues that they're not acting upon.
And, of course, the president has said, you know, I'm pro-life, and yet, of course, again this year, we're giving money to international organizations that are actively engaged in abortion. So they say one thing, they do the other, and, of course, they get credit from both sides. It's about time people begin to study what's really going on. Our pro-life president so far has not saved the life of one child. We'll be right back in just a moment with Colonel Ron Ray. We're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen, because we've lost the high ground.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia, at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City, what really happened with the TWA 800 on the route down off the eastern coast ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts, entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America, and it's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book on earth that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules, preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're talking about the attack on the moral fabric of our society and the attack on the Christian standards of our military. So pick up the story there, Colonel.
Well, let me just comment on you were really suggesting why the evangelical pulpits are so silent. They supported this president 100%, and it's an interesting thing that when Daniel Boorstin became librarian in the Library of Congress, there were a lot of people who were surprised because he'd been a very outspoken writer. He'd wrote a book published in 1961 called The Image, A Guide to Pseudo-Events in America. The Image, A Guide to Pseudo-Events in America. To sum up the book, he said, Americans live in a world of pseudo-facts, which is created for them by their own media. Now, this man became the librarian of the Library of Congress, the most important historian at any given time in America. The current historian of the Library of Congress is Jim Billington, the author of Fire in the Minds of Men. You're familiar with him, and he had, as the keynote address given October 12, 2002, at the National Book Fair at the library, he introduced David McCullough, of Yale, a member of Skull and Bones, but an excellent historian, who said, we're raising a generation of historical illiterates. This is dangerous to American liberty. We face a foe today who believes in enforced ignorance. We don't. And got a standing ovation from a very urban, liberal, politically astute audience there. So what's going on in America, and particularly in the churches, is that they have been dumbed down, and they don't understand what President Hoover said when he left office. He wrote a book, The Challenge of Liberty. Isn't it interesting that a president viewed his primary responsibility as the preservation of American liberty? And that's what he wrote about. And he said that the bureaucracy in our government, interacting with corporations and media, has already developed a vast ramifying propaganda, subtly designed to control American thought and opinion. The constant use of the radio, the platform, and the press, a device of exposition, news, and attack with one point of view, becomes a powerful force in transforming the nation's mentality and in destroying its independent judgment. We don't see today, don't realize, how few people can connect dots, how they can, that have the independent judgment. I always like to point out, where was America 100 years ago? 100 years ago, in 1904, 1905, a lone woman named Ida Tarbell, whose father and whose family business in the oil business had been destroyed by the predatory capitalistic practices of John D. Rockefeller. So she wrote a book called the Standard Oil, The History of the Standard Oil Trust. And it was picked up by a single magazine and serialized. This is a one woman writing a book, a very detailed, would be viewed today as a very difficult book to read. And that series of articles in 1904, 1905 created such an outcry among independent thinking Americans who could see the gross injustice of this that they demanded that action be taken. Hearings were held in Congress. Other media picked it up. They were independent-minded media at that time. And eventually, within 6 or 7 years, the Supreme Court of the United States, in cases that were brought against the Standard Oil Trust, actually ordered the breakup of the Standard Oil Trust, all as a result of the work of a single woman who could put facts out in the court of public opinion that would be listened to and picked up by independent-thinking Americans who were willing to do what it took to get their representative government to respond to this injustice, because it represented a grave injustice to all Americans. And you know what happened in 1908. In the midst of that, there was a group of people who met to form the Carnegie Foundation, and the question posed at the early meeting was, how do we change the way of life of such an independent-minded people? And you know what happened there, and the foundations, their power and influence, will explain that if one woman and one magazine could threaten the entire, one of the most powerful capitalistic combinations of power in the country, then the way of life of this people needed to be changed. And we only had 30 years later, 1934, with the publication of Hoover's book, you can see that they've already made a dramatic inroad onto that.
And of course, I think it's important to realize what the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace decided. The best way to change America for the International Carnegie International Foundation for Peace, was to create a war. And that's exactly what they did. Working with their counterparts in England, they brought about World War I and prolonged that long and bloody war, because their whole idea was to so damage the psyche of the people that they would accept world government. If anybody would like to hear a documentation on that, it's covered in my Iraq the Untold Story syllabus and talk, or you can actually hear my interview with Norman Dodd, who was assigned to investigate the Carnegie International Foundation, and his story of what they found when they went to the papers of the Carnegie International Foundation. You'll find that interview in our four-tape set called The Secret Government. You're not going to hear that elsewhere, though. They don't want you to hear.
Four tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination, a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. Or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Ron Ray, and we're really talking about what's happening to America and the fact that Christianity is under attack. Because the people who are behind this movement, and many of them, of course, are sitting on our Supreme Court today, really want to destroy the religious foundation of America because they hate Christianity. They want to convert us into a secular nation, knowing full well that in America, different than any other nation in all recorded history, our freedom comes from God. And that was why they've done everything they could to discourage the reading and studying of the Declaration of Independence, which was basically the Articles of Confederation of the United States. This was stating what America was to be, and everybody knew that. In fact, if you go back and you recite the Gettysburg Address, 47 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men were created equal. With those words, of course, Abraham Lincoln began the Gettysburg Address 47 years before he gave the address in 1863 was 1776. And the concept that all men were created equal came from the Declaration of Independence. Everybody knew, until the last 50 years, that the Declaration of Independence separated America from all other nations because here, uniquely, we acknowledged our freedom came from God, and we were to be a free people, and there was to be a little government interference, but very little government interference in our lives. The wicked people, of course, want government to regulate every aspect of our lives. Oh, in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden or some other threat. The always has to be a threat to get the people to give up their liberty.
Well, you know, what's interesting, Stan, is that that was all on display for the American people this year in the so-called Ten Commandments case, the one that came out of Kentucky. And I'm just saying, if you want to know that our side's asleep on the watch, your listeners, and maybe we ought to do an entire show on that case, because it was really, a lot of truth was revealed, but the news media across the board, and I'm talking about conservative media, I'm talking about church media, Baptist media, Catholic media, the so-called religious right media, nobody told you what the case was really about.
And of course, what's interesting, you were actually involved in that, weren't you?
I actually was. I've worked very closely with a couple called Tom and Claudia Reiner. Claudia was a state representative in Kentucky that actually introduced the bill that passed in 1978 that required the putting of the Ten Commandments up in every classroom across the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And when the attack came from the ACLU, it ended up in Stone versus Graham, 1980 case, which put limitations on the use of the Bible and the use of the Ten Commandments in a classroom. Even that case didn't outlaw it, but the media told us that it did, and everybody came along to find out that they thought it meant you couldn't put the Ten Commandments up, but you could put the Ten Commandments up, and you could even use the Bible in an appropriate curriculum of studying history or civics or comparative religion or the like. People don't read the cases. Our side doesn't pay attention. We take shortcuts. And most of our conservative groups, even many of our friends, have a business plan, not a battle plan. But what was going on in Kentucky in 1999, and I was asked to be counsel, they had put up just the Ten Commandments, as had been done in 1978, and a lot of pastors were wanting to do that, and our advice to them was that will be viewed as a church or religious document, and you'll find yourself on the short end. What we need to do is put up documents of American civil government from the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to the Kentucky Constitution, an actual page from the Congressional Record, which was blown up, that has the Ten Commandments in it, so that you can make it clear that we're not talking about religion, we're not talking about church, this is not about worship, we're talking about the foundations of American law and civil government. And that's what was actually done. And during 1999, the ACLU attacked. There was a hearing held in which the oral argument took place before a Clinton-appointed judge in London, Kentucky, and the ACLU and the judge both agreed that if we had put up the Code of Hammurabi, if we'd put up other religious documents from around the world with the Ten Commandments, there'd be no complaint. That's comparative religion. But, of course, none of those other documents have anything to do with the foundations of American law and civil government. And what we had put up, again, were some of the official and permanent history of the foundations of our government. So the case was never about the Ten Commandments, and of course the Declaration of Independence, which mentions God four times, is not a church document. It's not a religious document. And I had the temerity to make the argument to the court that there's no reason why these government documents should be considered by the religion clauses of the First Amendment. They apply to considerations of religion. And this is not religion. Well, I committed heresy in the court. And to make a long story short, they struck down these documents as religious documents. And despite the fact there was a resolution put up that explained the purpose by the legislators in the county who'd done it. And if you go forward till the argument on March, when it was argued by another lawyer, they'd gotten some religious right, national religious liberty lawyers, who would argue cases under the Supreme Court in the last 65 years. I was arguing history from the founding period, and I was trying to make it about the foundations of civil government, the foundations of American law. In fact, the Kentucky General Assembly, while the case was proceeding, actually passed a history lesson as a resolution. And you can see all of this on the firstprinciplespress.org website. These documents are there. They actually said, we quoted from many of our founding fathers about what they intended, how they meant separation of church and state. And then they, after putting all this history together in the resolution, our Kentucky General Assembly actually made a finding of historical fact that the Ten Commandments is the precedent legal code of the Commonwealth, which has provided the foundation for many of the civil and criminal statutes enacted into law throughout the history of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. In other words, a legislative finding after hearings and with a history lesson in front of it, and that document, just like the documents that were under attack in Kentucky, has never been presented in the Kentucky media while it was going on here, or in the national media, in the religious media, in the liberal media, national television. It always sounded like the Ten Commandments, and people were led to believe that what was being done had something to do with religion or church, and that was simply never the case. And then if you see what happened in the oral arguments and read the opinions, you'll see that the court, it was a 5-4 case. And the case that came out of Texas involved a monument. It was 5-4, and it upheld the monument on a courthouse lawn in Austin, Texas. But the Kentucky case went 5-4 the other way, and in the five that said, they said very clearly that we have a conflict between American history and the Supreme Court decisions from the last 60 years. And we support the 60 years of recent Supreme Court precedent.
And I think what people really need to understand the significance that Justice Kennedy had switched sides. On one instance, it was all right to display the Ten Commandments. On the other side, it wasn't all right to display the Ten Commandments. One man rules America. When one man, or even nine men, can, you know, change the entire structure of our society, we're in real trouble. And we have judicial tyranny in America today. And you really must understand that these people are motivated, at least many of them, because of an intense hatred of Christianity and anything that has to do with God. When you understand that, it all makes sense. Otherwise, nothing makes sense.
Well, when I was succeeded, and I had a co-counsel who's since died, his name was Ted Amshoff, was a great appellate lawyer and a great constitutional lawyer, handled many cases and won a very important case in Kentucky on the right to homeschool children, the right to have independent Christian schools, the first one in the country that upheld the notion that they do not have to be licensed by the state, either private Christian schools or homeschools be licensed by the state. And he's a great lawyer and died 18 months ago. But we ended up putting in front of the court this resolution so there'd be nobody going back to look at what the legislators were staying in church, and, you know, there people get caught up in that. We wanted there to be a legislative statement of why we put these documents up. And what it said was, our citizens no longer understand why America's national motto is "In God We Trust." Our citizens don't understand what it means that America's one nation under God. And there were a lot of history and a lot of displays on the walls of the courthouses. When people come in here, they'll get a chance to look at some of these documents, such as the Mayflower Compact, the first civil document of American government, 1620, November the 11th, by the way. That's coming up in 3 days. Your listeners might be happy to know that prior to making an Armistice Day in the 20th century and after World War One, the children were taught that November 11th in America was Mayflower Compact Day. And now we call it Veterans Day, and long since have moved away from the Christian foundations. But Sandra Day O'Connor, the whole dispute was not about what had happened after 2001. They put lots of different documents up trying to get the ACLU to give permission. The whole case turned on the original display we put up and the resolution. Sandra Day O'Connor got angry. And she said, this resolution has got a mean sectarian spirit about it. Why was that? We quoted from previous Supreme Court cases, four of them to be exact, all of which had held that between 1844 and 1931, that America was a Christian nation. Can you imagine a mean religious, a mean church experience is expressed by quoting prior Supreme Court cases? That's how absurd what's going on. Well, what has happened is in the last 65 years, the Supreme Court has hijacked our law and turned its back on our history. And in fact, we're starting to see, and I'm sure your readers and your listeners know this, Stan, because you've written about it and talked about it yourself, that we're starting to see increasingly international law being cited as precedent in Supreme Court cases to change America.
But don't you think that's really because there are people who hate America that want to merge us into this one world government?
There's no question about that. There's no question pointed out. And what was interesting is the four justices, and that is Scalia, Thomas, Kennedy, and Chief Justice Rehnquist, all said nothing could be more neutral than these historic documents of American civil government. What could be more neutral than to put up documents of our history, particularly the Declaration of Independence, which is the first organic law of the United States? Most lawyers don't know that, but there is a canon, if you will, a core of fundamental laws called the organic laws of the United States. The first one is the Declaration of Independence. The second one is the Articles of Confederation. The third one is the Northwest Ordinance. And I can tell you, school children used to be very familiar with the Northwest Ordinance, which was adopted after the Articles of Confederation to set down the criteria by which new states would come in to the United States. A very important document. And then you've got the Constitution is the fourth organic law of the United States. The Bill of Rights is the fifth organic law of the United States. And if you read the preamble to the Bill of Rights and many of the constitutions that people give out, conservative groups pass out, omit the preamble to the Bill of Rights, which contains some very important notions that this is to limit the reach of government and to preserve what is left for the states and the people. It's a very important document. So the Ten Commandments case was not about religion and wasn't about the church. It was literally a sophisticated and careful attack on the founding laws of the United States, and a majority of justice, 5-4, said that that history has to give way with recent Supreme Court opinions. That was candid. They didn't claim it was a flexible constitution. They made no pretext of going back to the Constitution and trying to interpret it in light of a growing and evolving view of what that Constitution means. They bold-faced said, remember Mao said all political power goes out of the barrel of a gun. They made a bold-faced statement that the history gives way for the decisions of the last 65 years. And you and I both know about the history of Paul Fisher's work behind the lodge door, which your listeners should get from Radio Liberty, or if Stan doesn't have them, you can certainly get them from firstprinciplespress.org. First Principles carries Paul Fisher's work about how high-degreed Masons became a majority on the court between 1941 and 1971, when these critical decisions, so-called separating church and state, began to remove God from our government.
Well, now, of course, was Sandra Day O'Connor then the swing vote on those two cases, one where it was all right to display the Ten Commandments, the other one where it wasn't all right?
I think she did swing. I think she was the swing vote. I need to go back and care. I've been carefully paid attention to the Kentucky McCreary County case because I'd been involved, and the other one was a monument. And the monument, while I think is entirely proper, the monument's not the same as an attempt to censor, which is really what it was. It was the censorship and the suppression of the Declaration of Independence and organic laws of the United States. And in fact, the congressional record, think about the notion of the idea of the separation of powers. Can one branch of government issue an order to suppress, limit the display, the reading, or the passing out, a distribution of the official acts of one of the other branches of government? Can you imagine the president signing an executive order saying that Supreme Court opinions cannot be distributed?
Well, of course, I think that the significant thing is that really they knew exactly what they were doing. They did not want the American people to understand the foundations of our freedom. And you remove those documents, you remove the very basis of this country. And if you're dedicated to the idea of a world government, then you certainly don't want patriotism or this belief that America is any better than any other country.
Well, that's exactly true. And, you know, what Americans don't know, again, I go back to the point. If you go back and look at the chair, facing the Speaker's chair in the U.S. House of Representatives is a representation of Moses. And if you go look around the nation's capital, you go into the Supreme Court building itself. As you walk to the main oak doorway to the inner courtroom where the hearings are held, the Ten Commandments from Exodus 20 is the only symbol on the bottom of the two engraved doors. And, of course, above where the Chief Justice sits, there's a marble bas-relief sculptured panel on the wall above the bench in the inner courtroom, and it basically shows the power of government, and it shows the Ten Commandments right there in the very center, stand out in above the Chief Justice's head, the power of government to the left, the majesty of the law to the right, and the power of government rests on the law. And it's very, very clear that the outside the Supreme Court, I think it's the East Portico, where it has a Supreme Court. So three places, and this is the Supreme Court building built during the New Deal, during Franklin Roosevelt's administration. So there's no question that with regard to the Supreme Court building. It's not a church house. The Ten Commandments is there because of its importance as the precedent legal code upon which American law and civil government were based. In other words, the whole case had nothing to do with church and religion. The only thing the ACLU could do when they looked at the display we put up in 99 was to claim that the Declaration of Independence, the congressional record, was a religious document, invoking the First Amendment and claiming that it was an establishment of religion. In other words, even a child could see that the Supreme Court building is not a church. The display of the Ten Commandments is not about a religion. It's about the source of our law.
And, of course, every session of the Supreme Court opens when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. Other people have said what we should do is change that to God save the United States from this dishonorable court. God bless you, Colonel. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to the next time you're back here on Radio Liberty.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, Colonel Ray is one of the people on the front lines of this battle. We're so fortunate to be able to have him come. Understand, America is under attack today. Not from the terrorists over in living in Morocco or Saudi Arabia, but from people sitting on our Supreme Court today.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean real, hard-to-find, all-natural Pure Soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorants, or antibacterials. Probably never, right? Hey, folks, Michael Trudeau here, and I want to tell you about my friend Marty. He's the owner and founder of the Calben Soap Company. For the past 55 years, the Calben Soap Company has been making triple concentrated pure soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now for the first time, Calben Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Calben Pure Soap is made from all natural ingredients. It's earth-friendly and it's safe. Call the Calben Soap Company today toll-free at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Visit them on the web at calbenpuresoap.com or call for information at 1-800-340-7091. That web address again is calbenpuresoap.com. Try Pure Soap once and I guarantee you'll never use anything else.
You know, when I was growing up, my parents weren't worried about our education. We were taught the basics of math and English, science and history, the joy of art and music, and the need for sports. And our generation turned out leaders in every field. But as a parent today, I am concerned with my child's education. That's why I chose VHM Christian School. I know that at VHM, my children are getting a quality education with a biblical foundation. I'm not worried whether they'll be prepared. I know they are. VHM gives my children the tools to succeed and instills moral values. There are so many issues for me to be concerned about. I'm glad my children's education is not one of them. Won't you call VHM today? Your child is worth it. Call 475-4762. That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope that you've enjoyed the program that we had with Colonel Ray. We have a great new book on the Supreme Court. It's called Betrayed by the Bends. It's John Stormer's book, and it's excellent. We also carry the book by Phyllis Schlafly on the supremacists. So we have those two books. You need to study this issue. You need to understand it. And then we have another book on the wall of separation. So there are those three books we carry. You need to understand that America is under attack today. Not from Osama bin Laden, not from the Muslims who live in this country or the Muslims who live over, you know, in Iraq. You are under attack from people here who are using the diversion of the war in Iraq to keep you from understanding that we're losing our freedom here at home. And then, of course, I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is putting on an all-day seminar on the 19th of November, right here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And we're bringing in outside speakers. We hope that we'll get a good turnout. And if you can come, and we're going to have to know this week, we're going to have to cut off our reservations. So give us a call at 1-800 on the end of this week. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or get a great turnout. We hope that you can come and bring your friends. You need to have the material. You need to understand that America is under attack today. Our freedom, our future, our families are, well, if we do not save America, what future do they have? So understand what this is about, and you'll have an opportunity to hear some really great talks and get a lot of great material. So our number again is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you're going to come and make a reservation, and then, of course, the three books, Betrayed by the Bench, The Supremacists, and The Wall of Separation, all books that you need to read to understand what this is really all about. We have a little pamphlet we put together saying we are a republic. What's the difference between a republic and a democracy? Why does the leaders of both the Democrat and Republican Party keep insisting the United States is a democracy? When if you read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and the Federalist Papers, and the constitutions of every simple one of our states, all 50 states, you'll never see once the use of the word democracy used other than to decry it and say the last thing we want is a democracy, because our founding fathers realized that democracy always results in tyranny. We do carry a book written by a Satanist. His name is Mandy P. Hall. The book is called The Secret Destiny of America. It was written back in the 20s or 30s, where he explains to you what democracy is all about, how it has been the goal of the secret societies for 3,000 years. You need to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. Let me simply suggest our little pamphlet entitled We Are a Republic is important. If you want to understand what's happening financially, you need to get my pamphlet on the history of money. They're about 50 pages, 40 or 50 pages, and the compilations of our newsletters. We have a DVD and called The Coming Financial Crisis. And if you read or you read Alan Greenspan's last address just this last week to the Congress, why, you'll know that he is very, very concerned. But you have to learn how to read Greenspeak. And so we'll be doing a newsletter on that sometime in the future. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter on the peak oil and the scam that is going to impoverish you and of course, drive a lot of people into poverty, and it's all planned, you need to understand the background of the oil scam. Peak Oil 2 is our latest newsletter. If you'd like a copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Peak Oil 1 is up on our webpage already at RadioLiberty.com. Please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day, either directly or indirectly on the Internet. You can pull down our newsletters, copy those newsletters. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products, and they do help us. And if you get them through us, you get a special video or 4 tapes that we've produced. And then, of course, remember, of course, that the conference coming up on the 19th of November, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty.